Hello, everyone. Matthew Duma here, editor with the Canadian Journal of Emergency Nursing, and I have the pleasure today of being here with Keisha Lowe, who wrote an excellent article that I think you should check out from the Canadian Journal of Emergency Nursing, the Spring 2020 edition. You'll find her article on opioid use disorder. Thank you for joining me today, Keisha.
Yeah, thank you so much, Matt. I'm happy to be here and answer a few extra questions.
Awesome. That's great. Can we start off by, can you tell me where did you do your training?
Yeah, I did my education through U of C. And so I finished that in 2010 and then started working at Foothills Emergency. And then while I was there, I obtained my ACCN emergency certification. And so that was around 2015. And then after I had finished that, I went on to do some travel nursing in the US. So I did that for about 3 years. And while I was doing that, I got my master's.
Outstanding.
Yeah. So I got my master's in health administration while I was away. And then I came back at that time when I finished and started working on this program.
Well, that's fantastic. That's great. Where are you working now? What is your current role? Where do you work?
Yeah, so I work for the Emergency Strategic Clinical Network, the ESCN. It's a group out of the AHS, and it's a provincial team. There's members of our team across the whole province, and it's very multidisciplinary. So it's nurses, physicians, pharmacists, there's patient advisors, and everyone has a very different skill set to help improve. Our goal is to improve care in emergency departments and urgent cares across our province. So we do a lot of great things, and a lot of them are research-based. Some are things like a commercial, when not to go to emergency, aligning ourselves with Choosing Wisely campaign, some posters, helping with patient experience with waiting room posters and wait times, that type of thing. So all very focused on how can we apply evidence to emergency departments across our province.
Oh, very good.
Yeah.
That's really cool. I know that many of our listeners and our readers are, of course, outside of Alberta, so not... we often talk about the Emergency Strategic Clinical Network as being really the body, the organization who provides us with like the research and the clinical innovation that guides the rest of the province.
That's yes, cool. Absolutely. Yeah, I think it's a great way to bring all the emergency departments together, making sure that the care somebody receives in, let's say, Vermilion would be the same as the care they would receive in Edmonton.
Yeah.
Or Lethbridge. So I think that's great. And it's a great way to not duplicate resources. Everyone's kind of working together to have the best outcomes for our patients.
Okay. And I see that you're a senior practice consultant. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a mouthful of a title, that's for sure. Most of the time I just go with nurse consultant. But really all that means is I provide expertise from a nursing perspective to our group. And in the role that I'm working in now, what that means is helping emergency departments to implement this program. And it could be anything from project management, change management expertise to education and supporting local sites.
Very cool. How do you use research in your job?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. So our team has a scientific office. Our team is focused on using evidence-based practice and taking that in. And so what we do is we take that information and we use it to identify potential issues, potential barriers that emergency departments clinicians and patients may be facing and help come up with a solution. So what we do is once we identify an issue, we would then apply for a grant and then start tackling that problem. And so what the science research does for us is helps us to identify what metrics we need to identify to establish what success is, where we need to focus our attention to. And it really helps for programs like this. It helps us guide our strategies for implementation. So being able to understand our metrics for success allows me to hone in on where I need to be focused on, what is need to have, what are nice to haves. It also helps for buy-in for our stakeholders. It really is very helpful to go to a site that's very new to this and they're kind of on the fence whether or not they're interested in implementing a program, for me to come with cold hard stats and proof to show that this program is effective. So that's nice too, to create buy-in. Once sites have implemented the program, it really helps from a reinforcement evaluation standpoint. Local stakeholders are able to truly see, wow, we've done this and we've helped somebody. And that makes a huge impact in the sites being able to sustain our program. So I think that's really good. And it really does help me as a consultant help the sites identify where there may be potential areas of need and support from my end. So what I can do is if I see there are a drop in numbers, I can go back to that site, work with them, talk to them, see what we can do to increase the uptake of the program, or if they're encountering any barriers that I can help with.
Well, very good. This is actually, it's a good segue, I think, to if you can tell us about the program specifically, what it is, when did it start and why?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe just to give the viewers a little bit of a better idea, I'll share my screen here and then I can work through. There's kind of two aspects of my work, and one aspect is to help the program piece and teach sites about the program, but also there's a whole piece of how we actually go about implementing. So if we were to talk about our project from the very beginning, I'll just maybe zoom in a little bit because it may be a little bit small. Our program started in March of 2018, just right here, and that's spent the first 3 months actually developing the program, the protocol, the policies, and what that program may look like. And then from there, we started our pilot sites. So we piloted at Northeast Community Health Center at Grey Nuns, both in Edmonton, and then Rocky View in Calgary. Once we got some feedback from those three pilot sites, we then moved into our second phase, and that was to implement at all the Calgary and Edmonton major sites. And then about a year ago now, we moved into our last phase, which was to implement fully at all the regional and rural hospitals. So that's kind of the timeline of our project. And what our project really entails has been sort of broken down into five steps here. So if I were to go to a site, this is kind of the process I would take. And the first step would be to have a kickoff meeting with the key local stakeholders. And it's multidisciplinary. So what that means is we want to buy in from our emergency physician, a nurse, the unit, the administrator, maybe that's the site manager, unit manager, department manager, CNEs, RN champions, pharmacy, social work, if available, some sites don't have them, and anybody else that's interested. So some local sites have their own program. Maybe they have addictions counselors available, Indigenous liaisons. We always want to include them. So what we would do is make them champions of our program. And that's really important for the sustainability of our program. As they become champions, they start to own this program themselves, and that will help perpetuate. I won't be around forever. And so this really allows each site to have their own group of champions that will move this program forward. So from there, we gave them the major details of the program and of the protocol. And then after that, the third and fourth step becomes a pretty big education effort. So educating the staff, nurses, physicians, many are mixed emergent acute care or just emergency nurses. And then physicians as well. We have five physicians in our group, that one for each zone, and they are responsible to provide physician to physician education. So really good support from that perspective. And this last step here is to support, and that's ongoing project program clinical support after they have just fully implemented the program. So that's kind of what the meat and potatoes of our work looks like in terms of implementing this program at a site. And then if I change gears, move on to more program details, this is at a very high level what our program looks like. So it's very simple. We would essentially screen for patients living with opioid use disorder in emergency departments. Then we would start patients on buprenorphine, naloxone, or Buprenil, or Suboxone, whatever you want to call it. And then there we would discharge patients. We would discharge them to local community clinics or primary care, if available, to continue patient care. When we initiate patients on buprenorphine, naloxone, it's usually a 2 to 3 day titration. So in emergency departments, we would focus on providing day one care, and then day two and so on and so forth would be taken care of by the clinic. We have over 20 clinic partners, some AHS, some non-AHS, across our province. And some are in-person bricks and mortar clinics, and some leverage technology to be able to connect with patients in very remote areas through phone, text message, telehealth, Zoom, that type of thing. So a really great clinic partnership in order to ensure that patients have safe transition of care. There's no one falling through the gaps through this program.
Keisha, I think this might come as a surprise to some of our nurse colleagues in other jurisdictions, in other provinces and communities in Canada, is that, so you're saying that if you see someone on a night shift in an emergency department, then you can get them next day or next 2 day appointments, or at the very least some sort of electronic follow-up. Is that true?
Yeah, absolutely. We have done a really good job of leveraging our centralized healthcare system in Alberta. So I think it's really great. We have guaranteed next day, no appointment, walk-in referrals. So essentially a patient just has to show up to the clinic, or if it's a virtual type clinic, they would essentially get a phone call the very next day from a physician to assess them and continue their care. So really there's no gap in care. Patients are set up for success, and make sure that they transition very easily from that emergency acute environment onto the primary care clinic side.
Wow. That's great.
And so here's that clinic I was talking about that we work very closely with. It's the Virtual Opioid Dependency Program, or the VODP. And so this clinic, like many of the others, operates 7 days a week. So like you're saying, Matt, we have, if I initiate a patient Friday at 2 a.m, I don't have to worry, maybe it's Saturday, maybe it's a long weekend, that they're not going to be able to go to a clinic. Many of them are operating 7 days a week, so we have seamless care. And they call the patient the next day. The VODP actually just won a award from the Health Quality Council of Alberta for improving access to patients and improving their ability to have healthcare. So it's a specialized opioid agonist treatment center, and they are able to offer services to patients in every corner of the province. Essentially, they could be in High Level, La Crete, or they can be in Milk River and still get healthcare.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, let me just think here. So total sites that we have implemented across Alberta, if you guys are interested in some numbers, we've implemented at 108 emergency departments and then at 8 urgent care centers and advanced ambulatory care settings. And that's actually really easy for us to do. It doesn't matter if you're a large urban level one trauma center or if you're a walk-in really doing ambulatory care services. This program that we have created works across all of that. It could work in primary care. And I think it's a really great way to get this medication out there and available for our patients. Mm-hmm. I've just pulled up this last slide here. And really, when we're talking about research and what that does for us, I think this is a great thing. So I've included it here. This recently just came out from our team, and it's looking at our data that we have collected over the last 2 years. And I thought some people would be interested in this. So there is a limitation to what we can collect and what we're willing to, how much effort we want to collect data. And so we've leveraged things like Pyxis, or in Alberta, we have electronic computer system, or in Calgary, sorry, electronic charting. So we have been able to draw information from those sites. And so we're only reporting data from 24 sites in all across our province, and then 22 community clinics. And so this is a mix of manual data collection and electronic, so that can be poses a challenge to some of our stakeholders. But I think this is great. In the last 2 years, we have initiated over 1,600 patients on an eMERGE visit, and again, that's only at 24 sites. So if we were to include the whole province of 108 sites, it's much higher than that. And then a good portion of these patients were actually discharged home. We have two streams to our protocol, and it depends on how much withdrawal that patient is in at that point in time. But many of these patients don't need to come into hospital to have their opioid use disorder managed, which is great. We don't want to have a huge influx of patients being admitted, occupying our precious, precious inpatient space for initiation of buprenorphine. So 63% of these patients were discharged home. And this bottom piece that we are super, super proud of is that of the clinics that we're collecting information from, 48%, so about approximately 50% of patients that we refer attend their clinic appointment the next day successfully. And that's huge. You could look at it from a glass half empty, glass half full perspective, understanding that these patients are complex. They have many, many social issues that can come into play. So having a success rate of 50% is very impressive. It's much higher than many other programs that are out there. So we are quite proud of that. And then this last one, this last stat I'll share with you, is that 57% of patients that are discharged are still filling an OAT prescription 180 days later. So that really, really gives us a good idea of how many patients are successfully continuing getting off of their dependency to maybe illicit or prescription opioids onto something safe, onto Suboxone, moving on with things that are important to them, right? So may that be work, housing, family, anything that ideally just get on with their lives, right?
Wow. That's incredible. That's really, really impactful work for you to be able to report on. I can't believe almost 60% of patients actually continue to refill their prescriptions. That's almost unheard of. There's American literature to suggest that only about 2/3 of antibiotic prescriptions in some American hospitals actually get filled after emergency department visits. Yeah, that's incredible.
Yeah, and I think we owe it a lot to our partnership with the clinic, right? And to have that, as you mentioned, guaranteed next day, no questions asked appointment has gone leaps and bounds to help us improve our numbers and our success.
Wow. Well done.
Yeah.
I'm curious to know if you can, for Canadian emergency nurses outside of Alberta, what can you share with them about the importance of this therapy and things that they can do to better take care of opioid use disorders, and any recommendations you have for their practice?
Oh, there's lots of things I can say there, Matt. I think one thing is that I really want to encourage the awareness of opioid use, opioid use disorder, what that actually means. We want to eliminate that stigma of, oh, they're a drug addict, or they did this to themselves, they made that choice, I didn't, and so I don't really want to help them. Oh, they're drug seekers. We want to get rid of that language. We want to get rid of that mentality. We know that opioids create this chemical change in our brain. We become dependent on opioids. We'll always need more and more and more opioids as time goes on. So we really, it's difficult to control, right? If you don't have opioids in your system, your mu receptors are empty. They're screaming, they're craving for it. And that manifests in withdrawal symptoms, cravings, terrible psychological symptoms as well. So we really should not be blaming that patient, but really we need to be looking forward to how can we help this patient be safe. We know that the opioid crisis is just through the roof, not just in Alberta, across the country, across like North America. We know, I think it's, I put the stat in my article, but I forget it now. I know in Alberta, it's something like 2 Albertans every day that are dying from this. So that's pretty significant. BC and Ontario also have extremely high numbers. And we want to do something about this. Nobody wants to overdose and potentially die from fentanyl. It's because they have gotten to a point where they are so dependent and they will do anything to get opioids on mu receptors. So we really want to get rid of that mentality of and that stigma around opioid use. And I think the big take home I want to share is that it's easy to manage. Like, there's the buprenorphine, naloxone, or Suboxone has been proven to be effective. It's safe and it's so easy. There's key pharmacological properties of buprenorphine, allowing it to be very flexible. So potentially if you were to take too many doses of your prescribed medication, you would still be safe. You wouldn't overdose. And there's also a very long half-life, so it protects that patient from potential overdose from that perspective, and a long period of time without cravings and withdrawal symptoms. So I think it's super easy. Patient just takes it once a day. Sometimes if it works for that patient, they take it twice a day. It's relatively cheap, and it's easy for physicians and NPs to prescribe. So there really should be no excuse, no reason to not start patients on Suboxone. Even if they don't do well on Suboxone, they still, their use disorders too high, they can be transitioned onto other agonist therapies. So we really want to try and get as much Suboxone out there and help our patients along, eliminate the severity of the opioid crisis across the world, I guess. Yeah.
This has been something that, because this is not my area of expertise as an emergency nurse, though I come across it in my clinical practice, is that I've had to reframe opioid use disorder to know that there is, a quantitative empirical way to assess it, the clinical opioid withdrawal scale, that there are treatments that are relatively easy to initiate and very effective compared to other treatments that we provide in emergency departments. Before, I would look at addictions and addictions treatment in the emergency department as not being very effective, possibly harmful for patients and harmful for staff, not, low satisfaction for everyone involved. And this has really changed that. This is a really great paper that you wrote and speaks to an excellent program.
Yeah, thank you. I was getting very tired of providing that naloxone kit to the patient, doing harm reduction teaching, and that may help some, but for many, it doesn't. And I see them, I don't know, it could be that same day, maybe the next day, in again with a fentanyl overdose. And for me, you know, our goal as nurses is to help that patient. And so what really are we doing for them? So I think, like you said, I think it's great because there is a treatment. And so we can easily start that patient and help them move forward instead of this revolving door of you come in, you overdose, you get an Narcan kit, we do teaching, and then it just goes over and over and over again. Like you say, nobody wins, and it's not very satisfying for anybody.
No. Before this, it was insanity. I know this isn't a situation that's special to the site that I work at, an inner city hospital, but we, prior to having this program in place, we had a gentleman who overdosed in our department multiple times on fentanyl prior to his admission, because we didn't have, there weren't beds available. We didn't have a program that could treat him as an outpatient adequately. So he was being admitted for cellulitis and osteomyelitis, and he needed to continue using, and our in-hospital replacement therapy at the time wasn't robust enough. So yeah, it's incredible to me.
And you bring up a great point, right? And so it's not just those patients that are coming in with withdrawal symptoms or overdose, but it could be something else. It could be that infected injection site. It could be that chronic pain patient, or it could be that prescription refill patient, right? So there's many different types of presentations for patients that have or are living with opioid use disorder. So I think us as part of our emergency nursing, we need to be on the lookout for a use disorder and being comfortable and being able to just ask those questions to that patient, creating that relationship with them, being able to get them on the right track. Mm-hmm.
Keisha, I couldn't be more appreciative of your time today speaking with us about your excellent article and elaborating so much so Canadian emergency nurses can better understand your work and the success of the program.
Yes, of course. No problem, Matt. I'm happy to be here. And I'll talk about my program all day, every day, if I had to. So I'm very, very proud. And I think our team should be very, very proud of the work they've done. They have impacted so many individuals. And I think this has been very meaningful work for me. And I hope we continue on and save many more lives.
Okay. Thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you so much. Bye, everyone.
Bye, everyone.